My name is Karen Howe. I am doing, this is the fourth of a four-part series on faith and health. To start with, summer resolutions. Begin each day with the affirmation found in Psalms 118, verse 24. This is the day which the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. This is talking about mid-year resolutions, and it was written by Reverend Dale Turner. He also said, give priority to essential concerns. Learn to distinguish what is more important from what is less important without making what is less important unimportant. Avoid procrastination. Do the thing you have to do when you have to do it, whether you feel like it or not. Instead of later, do it now. Instead of tomorrow, do it today. Learn to pause occasionally, or nothing worthwhile will catch up with you. Do one thing at a time and be all there when you do it. On Toscanini's 80th birthday, someone asked his son, Walter, what his father considered his most important achievement. And his son replied, for him, there can be no such thing. Whatever happens to be at the moment is the biggest thing in his life, whether it is conducting a symphony or peeling an orange. Do something for someone else each day at some cost to yourself. So that leads me into talking about wellness versus wholeness. We talk about wellness and wholeness. We can put wellness on a continuum, being illness on one end and wellness on the other. Then right in the middle we have not being sick and having no symptoms. So you have illness, not sick. And then on the wellness side, we have putting decisions of diet, exercise, smoking, stress reduction into action. But we talk about wholeness. Wholeness has a greater significance than wellness. We see wholeness as kind of the ebb and flow of life. Wholeness can include some periods of non-wellness. The Hebrew word which expresses the fullness and well-being, and which therefore comes nearest to expressing the Old Testament concept of health, is the word shalom. The root meaning of shalom is that of wholeness, completeness, and well-being, and that may denote the occurrence of these characteristics in every sphere of life, whether physical, mental, and spiritual, or individual, social, or national. In most cases in which the word shalom is used, it means an active, dynamic condition or relationship of wholeness and fulfillment. It's just a little bit of background. True shalom comes from God, for man finds his wholeness and fulfillment in God. What I'd like to share with you is a wholeness wheel. In looking at the wholeness wheel, this is hard talking with it up there and talking out this way. If you look at it, the reason I chose this particular wholeness wheel, there are some wholeness wheels where the spiritual is part of everything else. And I like this one because it shows the spiritual and God in the center. And it's the part, the center from the way I am. It shows me where I'm connected with God in the center. I guess we can relate this even to the potter's wheel, where if something is not centered on the wheel, what happens? Okay. Gets out of balance, gets crooked, can crumble. Okay. Let's look at the parts in our lives that make our lives whole. In the last three lectures, we've looked at physical health, nutrition, and how our bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit. But that doesn't give a whole picture of our life when we talk in the terms of wholeness. Exercise, however, takes me to the center daily. Through my daily run, it gives me the time to pray, to think, to meditate. It seems like a lot of the other things that I do, it's so busy that I never have that quiet time that I need to pull myself together. If a person desires to find the ultimate happiness, and if coming to the center gives that ultimate happiness and peace, Exercise is a good place to start. It takes within, to get people over to get out of the training stage, it takes about 3 to 5 weeks to develop a positive addiction to some sort of exercise, whether it's running, walking, swimming. And then once you start getting to that point, it can help get you to the center. There's a story of a man who, some of you may have heard this, but a man had a plan to jog himself to death, and it backfired. Have any of you heard of that story? Yeah. And what happened, it seemed that this, that Ken Cooper, the famous doctor for popularizing the aerobic fitness movement, tells the story about the fellow who was so depressed. It seemed that this poor fellow didn't want to live anymore, but he knew that if he committed suicide, his wife and children wouldn't be able to collect on his life insurance. So he decided to jog himself to death, so it would look as if his death were accidental. The first night he put on his jogging clothes, kissed his wife and children goodbye, and ran out the door. Because he wasn't in very good shape, however, his legs gave out before his heart did. Disappointed, but not dissuaded, he limped home and went to bed. The second night, it was the same story. His legs gave out, but his heart didn't. Every night after that, for a month, he repeated this ritual of kissing his family goodbye and running out the door. Then something began to happen that he hadn't counted on. He soon got hooked on jogging because it made him feel so good, and he forgot about his death wish. Scientific studies support the notion that exercise can have a positive effect on one's emotions and moods. Another example, but there's also another side to this story of being physically fit and following a healthy diet. The other side of the story is this. What happens if a person becomes very zealous in the care of his physical health, and that seems to be his only concern? A person can make health care a goal and end all living in all other spheres of his life. There are persons who devote their lives to careful programs of diet, exercise, and sleep, and they keep stress at a minimum, and they seem like they're the perfect version of health. The problem becomes that their health becomes their god, and they sacrifice all other living to maintain it. In this case, one can be healthy from a physical point of view, yet from a spiritual point of view, be profoundly out of balance. So there are two sides. We do need to balance our physical fitness and our diet, and it's not just if we're physically fit does not mean we're going to be spiritually fit. Nutrition. We talked about nutrition last night. We're given one body to last us a lifetime, and we live in a throwaway society. There's the story of the old man that said, "If I'd known I was going to live this long," it was Robert Burns, I can't remember, but there was a story of an old man said, "If I'd known I was going to live this long, I would have treated myself better." The American diet of sweet and salty fat provides too many fat and sugar calories and not enough nutrients. In Ken Cooper's book, Aerobics Program for Well-Being, he states that life expectancy increases 11 years or more by following these few guidelines: to eat 3 meals per day, avoid snacks, eat breakfast, exercise 3 times per week, and get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And, you know, if you look at it in the terms, you could save, you could extend your life by 11 years or more. It could mean 11 more years of service to serve God and to serve other people. And it also 11 more years to celebrate life. Can you think of instances when nutrition and meals have become celebrations and can take you to the center? Mm-hmm. You use nutrition and by eating good foods where you come to the center. Yeah, and that brings into the terms of celebrating and being with people, and it is a celebration. I think, you know, going down now, so we've talked about physical exercise and nutrition. Now you're going to get into the emotional and the psychological part of this sphere. We all need stress in our lives. Too much stress is not good, but we all need stress. If there wasn't stress in our lives, we wouldn't get anything done. Nothing would be done for anybody, and we'd be all pretty miserable, I think, if there wasn't some amount of stress. But when a person becomes overwhelmed by stressors, he or she also becomes unbalanced. Some people handle stress in negative ways, could be overeating, smoking, drinking, withdrawing, sleeping. And you have to realize these are choices. It doesn't make a person a bad person, but if we look at some of the negative ways people deal with stress and ask ourselves the question, is what I'm doing in a negative way going to take me to that center? Is it going to take me closer to God, closer to finding fulfillment? I think so. I could think of when I love chocolate chip cookies, and if I can sit and eat a lot of chocolate chip cookies, and it'll make me feel good for the moment, but the pain and the stress does not go away from that. But for the moment, I can feel better. Some very obvious ways people gain control of their stress in healthy ways are through exercise, reading, writing, praying, meditating, crying, laughing, helping others, and talking to someone, which could include talking to other people. It may include talking to a counselor, a pastor. Sometimes people do need that. Do you think of any other ways people handle stress in positive ways, in the emotional? And thank you. In the framework of the wholeness wheel, what have you done to make your life more fulfilling or lead to the wholeness described in this wheel? If we start looking at these different areas and looking at family, vocational, recreational, intellectual, social, community, church, what have you done or have you known people to do to come to that center and to come to that the spiritual being that's described in this wheel? What makes life fulfilling? Okay, I'll ask you another way. Okay, I'm thinking of, let's take very vocational. What if you have a conflict with your chosen vocation? Say someone comes, a nuclear physicist, and then all of a sudden they decide they can't live with nuclear energy. And their family's livelihood depends on that, and it's going to create a big, they may have to make a big change in lifestyle to go along with their own philosophy. And with what they're doing with their vocation, they may be surviving, but it's not going along with really who they are from the inside. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think of when I was thinking even of the Bible study today, learning how to say no. A couple of years ago, I was teaching and my blood pressure went high, and there were certain stresses in my life that it was very difficult to handle. And so it was basically to say no to get my family pulled back together. And because the kids were under a lot of stress, and every time they were sick, I was under stress because I had always had to balance out, well, if I'm going to go to work or if I'm going to stay home with sick children. Well, stay home with sick children is obvious. And I think, so in that case, I had to basically say no, take a leave, and it was because of health reasons, and it is because of health reasons to take some time off. It's different than yours, but it's a commitment. I think it's the work that you do in with the Nicaragua and all of that too. The missionaries. I think TV watching the TV and the commercials, the children buy into that, and it's difficult to say no. It's getting easier for me to say no at this point, however, because I know it's not getting them anywhere, and they're starting to act when they want and want and want, rather than taking it out of the context of needs and what they need. I guess you could see the other side of, in looking at the family, a person's life who becomes so centered on just children, that where the life becomes just centered on the family, and the woman who goes through the empty nest syndrome when all the children leave, because she hasn't taken time. It could be a mother, it could be a father. They haven't taken any time for outside interests or service to others. And so if you take just that family and everything is geared towards that, and you're not getting, and you're not doing anything possibly in the social and community because you're spending all your energy right with the family, then that gets out of balance also. And I guess with family, how do you teach children to want to serve others too? You could look at recreational. And to me, I see, were you going to say, I'm sorry, were you going to say something about that? Okay. I was thinking about recreational, briefly. Go ahead. Recreational, singing, drama. How can those different things, how do those take us to the center? I was even thinking, when Candace was singing last night, the words of those sounds, the words were very powerful listening to him, and you could feel there was a certain peace as she was singing about it. And that was coming from outside, and it was coming inside and hitting me on the very inside of me, which was, pretty powerful. And, Marilyn, when she was singing those spirituals, you could feel some of those things that she was singing.
Recreation. It's a very high point for a lot of people today, and that is the goal of their lives. I work in a blue collar community, and everything is geared toward having the money to go skiing, or to have a boat to go fishing, or to there's a work is devalued. Way of acquiring the capital and do these other things. And mm-hmm. The things that you want to do are all in that recreational category pretty much. So most of them are not engaged in their community, not engaged in educational pursuits. They don't see themselves in any kind of long-term vocational growth. Family maybe would be something. Physical exercise probably not too much, nor much cognition and nutrition. A real heavy emphasis on recreation and maybe a family. Mm-hmm. And where recreation is somehow, that's supposed to provide you with a sense of feeling good that makes up for all the rest of the stuff you have to do in your life. And it's sort of like, that's a blind alley. It's an idolatry where you expect this God to produce something for you that you want that it can't possibly do. It's like expecting your family provide you with all of your sense of well-being and purpose in life, and it really becomes out of whack. And it lures, the commercialism really latches into us in the recreational department. Just really grabs a hold of us, move the next notch up in that set of skis. A little bit more you could have this, and that's one of the places we really. Out of all of those, they really get sucked in, I think. And it becomes extremely stressful rather than wholeness.
I share something about, even recreational, and it kind of fits into recreational, kind of fits into nutrition, but Robert makes eating, going to restaurants, is a celebration. He makes it so much fun, and it takes the time a time out. Kind of, but it's like a celebration when you're with him and doing things, and I think, and just sitting around discussing with people, it's a time sometimes to recreate where you are. And I think there's a time for it every day, but I think our society does put far too much emphasis on that section of time, because you need to work so you have time for recreation. You need to work so you can have your boat and your skis and belong to the tennis club, the country club. And when in your life, when you put that much money into your recreation, you don't have time to enter into any of those other areas. Thank you. We have, looking at social community and church, how does that take us towards the center, or how does that inner part of me come out in that area, come out into the church, that spiritual side of me? How does that movement go in and out? Do you understand? What do I do? What do I do for social, for the social, for community, for the church? How do I contribute? How do things that people do in that social community or church that take people to the center?
It made a church an integral part of our lives, since in the participating in church, there's no stress. The people that you are relating to, for most part, they're already community-oriented people, because that's the only people that are really committed to the church. Because the church is, I feel that is a community together.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings you to the center, because everybody, not everybody, but the majority of the people you're going to find in the church, they are part of they have this that spiritual commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good, it's good to be around. And I think that it brings you, so sometimes the activities that you're involved with, they're different. I mean, they're completely different. And when by participating in that community, church community, it brings you to the center.
Mm-hmm. I mean, real social community and church apparently stands for all the relationships other than family. I don't seem to appear anyplace else. And any kind of sense of self-esteem comes largely from our interaction with other people and our experiences of being able to trust and be trusted, to be able to share and be shared with. Our self-knowledge grows out of that. Our concrete experience of God's acceptance comes primarily through other people. We can kind of do intellectual games with that.
Mm-hmm.
But we really need other people to help make that real. I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that really is a place where it leads to wholeness in terms of coming back toward us, in terms of going out. It's with other people that I'm able to sort out how I interact with my community. What's an appropriate response to injustice? How can we work together to respond to something that infuriates us or incenses us or draws us to a service of some kind? Alone, there's almost no way to do that. So the area of friendship justice—that's where I think the church is drawn to. You must be in a fantastic church, but many of the people who are in the church are not the kind of people you described to me. They're people who are there mm-hmm. with bad habits, and that's not to be extremely judgmental. But we all get into that. We kind of are there out of habit more than out of
fire or out of a real passion of some kind. And I don't find a lot of people coming to church because they really want to be involved in a community and a service or something.
Mm-hmm. I think of one thing that our church did, and everybody got together and they, everybody made food and provided a meal for, I think it was about 100 families in the Tacoma area. But everybody in the congregation had made something, but it was like a pulling together of resources to help somebody else. It was, you know, church, community, and it was something that good that was done. There's also, I think, sometimes people have a tendency to think they want to go to church and find out that because I'm a Christian, everything in the world's going to be okay. And they want to be uplifted all the time through sermons. When you're talking about justice, when sometimes we need to be to let, it needs to be let known to us that there's, we need to do some work. And we need to do some service to others.
I remember being in Nicaragua and talking with the Minister of Education, who was a Catholic priest named Fernando Cardinal. And the question was asked of him, and it was at the end of the meeting, if he had any message that he would like to tell the U.S. people before they went back. And everybody was expecting a message of stop the war, which of course they want. But what he said was, well, what I would like to say is I'm worried about young people in the United States. And people said, well, what do you mean? And he said, in Nicaragua, what the revolution has done is it's given young people a reason to live beyond themselves. It's given them an opportunity to serve. And if you go to Nicaragua, what you'll see is that the incredible vaccination campaigns going all out throughout the entire country, vaccinating children against polio and other kinds of diseases, carried out by young people. The literacy crusade, all over the country, going to the most remote parts of the country, teaching people how to read and write, the young people. And I look at that, and I look at that circle up there, the spiritual God, and I don't think that spiritual health is possible without a pretty high degree of justice. And I look at young people in our society today, and I think one of the things that we're not giving them is an opportunity for service beyond themselves, an opportunity to live for something of meaning beyond the next item of consumption. So I look at that social community church and then put justice in there too as being really central to spiritual health.
I did the same thing with class meetings with my daughter's class, and so then it worked so well with her class, we tried doing it at home. Two of my three children are more domineering than the other one, so it's we're getting the idea of giving the I messages, and instead of saying, well, you do this wrong, you know, to getting, well, what can I do to change it? So they start sensing that they have a little bit of, you know, control over their own actions towards others. Well, I think we need to wrap this up. Does anybody have any additional comments? Do you? Okay. I guess the first, and to close this, we do have a choice. We have a choice on how we're going to balance out our lives. And the next thing is that we have a responsibility to ourselves, and we have a responsibility to others. And I think we have a responsibility to more worldly, more global concerns with other people. Knowledge and information have power. I think Holden Village is a great place to get information and get you in tune to concerns outside of ourselves, our own families, and outside of our own communities. But that information and knowledge, you have some kind of power in that. And I think some people are not involved just out of not, some people just don't know because they haven't had the examples. The information I get here when I go back is to, you know, to share a little bit more, to share that information with other people. as far as needing information, as far as health goes, I have some books here, and I have pamphlets concerning more fitness and nutrition areas and stress. If any of you would like to come look at these, please feel free to do so. I have a bunch of information from the American Heart Association. You can take that with you if there's anything of interest for you here. I have a bibliography of books that I've used, if you care to see that. I'd be more than happy to share. They do have a couple books in the bookstore. Fit or Fat by Covert Bailey, excellent book as far as nutrition goes. And the Don't Eat Your Heart Out cookbook, which Joe Piscatello wrote. He's from Tacoma, Washington, and it's also a cookbook. Talk about cooking meals. It's and celebrating. There's excellent recipes in there, the low-fat, low-sugar, not very many, meat dishes, and it's an excellent book. It is in the bookstore. Mm-hmm. And it explains a little bit about heart disease. Has an introduction. The first half book is written with information and creating an awareness. Yes, the next thing is to visualize yourself in a change that you want to make. If what you are doing now is not working, to visualize yourself doing what you want to do in any one of those areas, so you do create a wholeness. If it's out of balance in one area, there are going to be times when that wheel will not be in balance. It's like a pendulum also. It does come back. But the next thing is, you need, with that visualizing yourself, you need to have a vision. How am I going to make myself better so I can be better with other people, so I can do more for other people? And then the next is to take action. If you can't commit to something big, commit to something small. And those small changes, small commitments, add up to big changes. The rainbow celebration here at Holden is creating an awareness for me, and I know for my children, and for all the people that I've talked to here. The experience has been one of creating awareness and wanting to go back and do something about it. I think I wish more people could have the opportunity to be involved in something like this. But it's the small changes, and if each person here makes changes when they go back, the world will be a better place. Anyway, thank you for coming. I guess we get to go to our picnic now.